Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning. We're pleased to bring our good friend Teresa Walker from the Associated Press to the show now. Teresa, what's going on? How's everything going in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm in good shape on lockdown. Essentially, I was going to be on vacation this week regardless. I try to take a week in March to, you know, get ready for April postseason and draft. And so I'm on a staycation this week and next, you know, just trying to heal up. Because if anybody heard me a week ago, I was the person that Ryan Tannehill asked on that conference call, do you have coronavirus? Because I sounded that bad.
Well, he actually said, do you have the corona? And I'm like, now, that could get confused for something. But I thought it was interesting that Tannehill already had, like, his little nickname for it.
Well, I'll say this. When I hear corona, I'm sorry. It just makes me want a beer. I'm sorry.
We could all use one.
I'm the same way. We could all use probably several. Teresa, we've been talking this week about the Olympics, and we kind of knew it was a foregone conclusion at some point that they were going to have to be moved and have to be postponed. Now that they've officially made that decision to postpone and move the Olympics from Tokyo to 2020, from 2020 to 2021, what's your reaction to that news as we continue to be affected by the impacts of the coronavirus around the world?
I honestly was just expecting it. I mean, it was a matter of time. And it's scary to think that, because look at what we've gone through in the last 2 weeks alone. 2 weeks ago, Joe and I, we were all preparing for the SEC tournament. And, you know, look how quickly things have changed in just 2 weeks. It's kind of astounding. Each day has brought yet another cancellation. There's still some things that are scheduled for this summer that, you know, we've heard nothing about. Wimbledon, British Open, but, you know, when the Olympics, you know, which wasn't due to start until July 24th, I was due to fly over July 22nd, you know, because that's a long airplane ride, I'm just saying. It just feels like it's a fait accompli. And guys, I know nobody wants to think about it, but the things that are next are going to be the start of high school, college, NFL football, and, you know, and it just seems like even that may end up being an inevitability at some point.
Yeah, and you may be right. It's just, this is again where I'm like, I have to check myself sometimes and think, man, like, we've basically been doing what we're doing for, 10 days now? You know, like, it's
not that long.
Yeah, it feels so much longer. And, of course, we can't help but look ahead. I guess I'm trying to, you know, remain an optimist and hope that, you know, that in a few weeks from now it'll say, okay, this actually has worked. We've taken some burden off of our, you know, our hospitals, which, again, is still the thing that I think some people are missing. It's, you know, you can talk about death rate and all this stuff, but, you know, what are you doing to your health system if you, you know, if we're allowing this virus to spread and to multiply, you know? And then if you do that to your health system, what does that do for people who have other ailments? I mean, there's a huge chain reaction here we're trying to avoid. But I still feel like, Teresa, if we are doing it well, if we do it well, in a few weeks, maybe, hopefully, we could get some news that, yeah, maybe by, you know, whatever, pick your date, August something, you could have some sort of normalcy return to society. But I don't know, maybe I am being a little sunshiny on that.
Joe, I wish I could be enjoying that thought process, but I've been reading a lot of experts who, you know, here's the thing, you know, we're trying to flatten the curve. Well, if everything comes back out at once, what do we risk again? The same potential risk of overwhelming our hospitals. And, you know, we've got health professionals in, you know, New York, Seattle, and in some areas that have been hit so hard that, you know, supply chain hasn't caught up. So, you know, I'm probably being a little bit more cynical and pessimistic just because of some of the reading I've done, and I hope I'm wrong. I do. But until there's a vaccine or an actual treatment that they can use to mitigate what this virus does to people, I just don't know. But then again, I live with my mother, who's about to be 75. My husband has asthma. And while he's incredibly healthy, you know, trust me, there's times when he's had issues breathing. So, you know, this is, I know too many people that would be directly and immediately impacted. And I'm just trying to choose and err on the side of caution as much as possible.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press on the line with us. And Teresa, let's just assume for the sake of this discussion that the NBA is eventually able to return and pick up their season, regardless of when that date may be, July, August, whenever they decide to do this and maybe are able to do this. How would you go about returning to the season if you're the NBA? Do you jump straight into the playoffs? Is there like a way that you do a play-in system with the playoff races in the Western and Eastern Conference? Do you abbreviate the playoffs? Like, how would you go about doing it if you're the NBA?
Well, here's the thing. With what we've got postponed and canceled at this point in American sports, it just seems like it's going to be tough to finish off the season without rushing through it. And one of the things we heard from the NBA players is, you know, how much they hate, you know, 4 games in 5 nights and those kind of things. You know, maybe it is just, you know, give them, you know, try to do a shortened version of the end of the season, because these guys are going to have to get back into shape as well. You know, maybe you do shorten the first round from 7 games. You know, remember back in the day, it used to be 5, and yeah, it hadn't been that long that it has been 7 games. So, you know, maybe you shorten the round of the playoffs, but, you know, we're still going to have to get to a point where they can even do that. But maybe just dive straight into them and shorten a couple of rounds. I mean, you know, Grizzly fans would be happy with that because they're the 8th seed and they'd be in. So, you know, although they were the team that had one of the roughest finishing stretches in the Western Conference. So, you know, New Orleans might not be happy with that. So, but to salvage something of this season, then that may be the way to go.
So, Teresa, I've got to give you props. You called, I think, really from even late last season, but certainly early in the offseason, Jack Conklin not coming back. I think you've said the same about Logan Ryan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But, yeah, where do you think things go from here? What do you think about what the Titans have done so far? And do you think that Jadeveon Clowney is a worthwhile pursuit at this point?
Well, I like what the Titans have done. I mean, they've kept Ryan Tannehill. They tagged Derrick Henry. And, you know, guess what? You know, TV contracts get done. You know, as long as you keep your lines of communication with Derrick Henry open, you know, and leave that chance of once the new money comes in, do a deal at that point. You know, there's ways to massage Derrick Henry and keep him happy, even though you've used the tag on him. Would like to, you know, maybe I like the idea of Jadeveon Clowney. $20 million a year? No. $17 million a year? Probably not. This is a guy who has played 16 games in his career in a season once. So, you know, that price tag seems to be coming down. Why? Because no one else has signed him yet. And that number is going to keep coming down. Kind of the same for Logan Ryan. If you could get Logan Ryan back, you know, Ian Rappaport tweeted last week that Ryan was wanting $10 million a year. Well, the longer these guys stay available, that means people are not meeting that number. So that gives the Titans chances to maybe be in on getting either or both of those guys. But, you know, I do like the idea of Jadeveon Clowney, because otherwise, why did you trade away Jarrell Casey? If was it only to create cap space? Cap space doesn't mean much unless you actually use it. So somebody's going to have to be signed to bring into this defense. And it does seem like it's defense at this point because of the needs that are there. You know, Vic Beasley Jr. is nice, but more outside pass rush is a good thing. And, you know, Clowney is a guy who can help defend the run. He's good at that. Almost maybe, you know, you're going to get double teams with him on the line. But, again, his health is an issue. And here's another delaying factor. The fact that they're kind of clamping down on, you know, physicals at this point is going, you know, with the NFL and trying to deal with the whole coronavirus situation, that's another complicating factor. So be patient, Titan fans. But I like what they've done. Jack Conklin, there's just not enough money to go around. And when you look at the deal he got from the Browns, that's a lot of money. And would you rather have Jack Conklin back or would you rather have Derrick Henry back? And that's kind of the choice that they were looking at. And I think everyone is happy at Derrick Henry being here. And again, that offensive line, Taylor Lewan, Roger Saffold, Ben Jones, that's a highly paid offensive line. You have to pick and choose and save some money at some place. And right tackle is going to be it, even with the deal that they did with Dennis Kelly. You know, they got Dennis Kelly for just a little bit more for 3 years than what Jack Conklin's getting from the Browns for a year.
Teresa, last thing for you here. Let's just assume for the sake of this discussion, the Titans aren't able to come to a deal with Jadeveon Clowney. The money is just too much and they're not able to do it. Well, then I think if you're John Robinson, you've got an interesting decision to make in the draft. You're 29th overall. You've just lost Jack Conklin at the tackle position, the pass rush position. I guess you feel okay about with bringing Vic Beasley in. Maybe you add another guy to that fold as well, but that's still an option on the table. I think regardless of whether or not Logan Ryan comes back, you're probably going to have to draft a cornerback at some point. So what would you do if you're John Robinson and the Titans? You're not able to sign Jadeveon Clowney, and you've got that 29th overall draft position in the first round. How would you handle that?
I'm still thinking outside pass rush help, because as much as, you know, I've seen some of these mock drafts, and yeah, the idea of a Dobbins or DeAndre Swift, you know, there as a running back to the team with Derrick Henry is a nice idea. But at that point, you're still going to have to address a need, and pass rush will be a need at that point.
Teresa Walker from the Associated Press has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Teresa, thanks so much for taking the time to come on with us, and stay safe.
Thank you, Joe and Robbie, and have a great day.
You too.
You too, Teresa.
Joe, when we come back, we're going to get back into the Olympics being postponed. What do we make of that decision, and what do we make of what that means for the future of perhaps the NFL and football once fall comes around? That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rextroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Jeremy Schapp of ESPN on the Olympic Games being postponed, moved from this summer in Tokyo to next summer. 2021 is when the Games will take place. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rextroad from The Athletic, taking you through this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, certainly as you listen to Jeremy Schapp detail kind of the history of the Olympic Games, everything that they've been able to play through, everything that they've been able to continue to move on as normal with, including the Zika virus in Rio in those games, it's just kind of illustrates, I think, the severity of the situation we've all grown accustomed to being aware of now with the coronavirus, that they've made this decision to postpone the Olympic Games and move them to a later time. And hopefully, I think we'll be ready by the time 2021 rolls around to take that challenge on and to move ahead with the Olympics. But that's kind of what we're all hoping for at this point, that it doesn't stretch out even longer than we've originally feared.
Yeah, you know, we had Tyler Scanlon on the other day, Robbie, you know, just graduated or just about to graduate. You think of school being over. It's actually not over. They're just not in school, but soon to be graduated Belmont senior. And he, you know, he brought up, because he was at Boston University before the Boston Marathon, you know, 124, 25 years, whatever it is, never canceled for anything. And you're talking world wars and you're talking Spanish flu and whatever else. And now here we are. This is a different deal. In case anyone was confused on that point now, this is a different deal. It's very serious. And so the Olympics, it works out. You know, you push it back 1 year. Of course, you have logistical headaches and you have costs. But, you know, Teresa, we just had Teresa Walker. I mean, she was going to go cover the Olympics. And there's another reason to call this as quickly as you can, so, you know, people can, you know, get out of their travel arrangements and all that stuff and try to prepare for a year from now. It works out well for the Olympics. I mean, the scary thing here is, you know, the year after year sports and their economic impact. I mean, the NCAA tournament, that's $870 million in revenue, okay, last year for the NCAA. But think about football. I mean, I'm still, like, I'm just keeping an open mind on everything. I think you have to consider the possibility. I'm certainly not to where I think it's a given, but you think about football, think about college football and the economic impact it has on so many communities – and on so many people. And if you were to take that out in the fall, you know, and just think about where we would be as an economy if we got to that point and then you take that out. I mean, it's devastating is a word that I don't think would be too strong.
I don't think so either. And look, I'm with you. I'm trying to remain like as optimistic as I can that by the time the fall comes around, you know, we start getting hot and heavy into football season with college football and the NFL, that we've got a better hold on this thing, and hopefully we're trending in the right direction at that point and reach a point where we're able to come back and resume activity as normal. But just kind of think about, obviously, there are much bigger implications if we're still in this situation when the fall comes around. But just think about, like, you know, we talk about the NBA and the NHL trying to return to action. You know, if we're still in a place as a society when, you know, August and September comes around and we're still dealing with this coronavirus situation to the same level that we're dealing with it right now, it's hard for me to imagine the NBA and the NHL would have come back at that point. So just imagine how, like, you know, sports starved people are going to be by the time football season comes around. Like, I would probably watch live streams of people playing backyard football at their own house at that point, from a pure sports perspective. And that's the other part of this too. Like, and people are going to go stir crazy, I think, in general, just in life in general. But, you know, sports, that aspect of it, you keep pushing things back and further back. And, you know, the NHL, the NBA, now the Olympics, you know, the MLS as well. Like, you never know what's going to come back when. And I think the uncertainty, certainly from a sports perspective, but I think larger than that in life in general, it's just a kind of a scary time to be in terms of just the pure uncertainty of it all.
Yeah, which is, again, why you want to feel like everyone is on the same page now. Everyone should be. I know there's people out there who still want to, you know, resist this and, you know, do, you know, herd mentality or whatever it is. You know, we need to think about the economy first. That's going to be more devastating. Like, right now, we should all be on the same page, which is do what you can do individually to avoid other people and to try to stop this thing. You know, I mean, that's really all you can do. And, you know, try to support your local businesses. I know we've been trying to do that. I think it's great to see some of the information out there, different restaurants that are doing takeout or now have added free delivery. A lot of them have added delivery. You know, do what you can do to help support that and help people, but do your part to stay the heck away from people. Just try that. We've got to try it. And the better that we're all on the same page on that, the better chance we have of getting out of this and the quicker, because you don't want to be in a situation where, okay, now you kind of let some things creep back in, and then a few months from now, it's like, no, got to go back indoors. It didn't work, you know? It's got to be really good right now. And, you know, you talk about college football, Robbie. I mean, these athletic departments obviously are, with a few exceptions where, you know, like men's basketball is such a big deal at a particular place. For the most part, you know, football at the – you know, state university level, Power Five leagues. I mean, it is, you know, it's the lifeblood of everything. And so you think of all the different things, including people who donate and what their economic situation is now and how it impacts them donating, fans buying tickets. I mean, so many different things and communities that are utterly dependent on those 6-7 weekends a year as such a big percentage of the economy. I mean, all these other sports, we miss them a lot, and you know there's a lot of money flowing there too. But football remains the king and the pillar economically of sports in this country. So, I mean that is where, to me, like if we got to the point where we're just not out of this at all yet, you know, that's where the testing and trying to still play games for television and television revenue, to me, would have to be something that is explored fully.
Joe, and we talked about it earlier in the show in terms of like the Olympic sports that you're going to miss watching. Like I look around, you've got your archery, you've got your badminton, all of these different things I find to be really fascinating. To me, water polo is one of the most fascinating sports on the earth to watch. Like, how these people don't drown when they're playing water polo is beyond me. And I think it was like the 2012 games, Doc Emmerich, who calls games for the NHL on NBC, he was calling like water polo games, and it was a revelation to me. Like, it was one of the coolest things that I have ever seen, and the shape that you have to be in And I think it's, you mentioned earlier in the show, there's like a 2 to 3 week period every 4 years that people get invested. People really care about some of these fringe, or I guess niche sports are the best ways to qualify it. I'm going to miss that. I know it's only getting delayed a year, and at the end of the day, the Olympics getting pushed back a year is really not the end of the world. We're going to be able to overcome that. But I do love me some water polo, Joe. What are you going to miss?
Yeah, you know what? In water polo, man, that is a – talk about a brutal sport, because there's a whole bunch of kicking and broken toes and stuff that goes on, too, under the water.
It's basically like watching the gladiators perform in the Roman Coliseum. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. There's a lot of sports like that in the summer games. Well, I will tell you, I covered in Rio, equestrian stuff, which I was – totally unprepared for and had no idea what I was looking at, but I mean, you're covering people, you're covering athletes, but some of those competitions and even like the, what set to music and stuff like that, I had never really watched it before. So you're there and it's amazing. It's like a completely different world. Another thing is rowing. I mean, that is such a, that can be a fantastic sport to watch live. And you're talking about great athletes and some competition, that's really high level. And again, you don't think about it much for 3 years and 49, 50 weeks, but it's that's some really good stuff too. The rowing events are really intense. We'll miss them.
We will. I mean, Greco-Roman wrestling, for God's
sake.
How could we forget about that? That sounds like some sort of like wrestling club I would have started in my basement, but it looks really entertaining by what I'm looking here on the internet. Greco-Roman wrestling, I've missed that in the past Olympic Games. I'll have to look forward to that in 2021.
And trampoline is that's kind of a sort of a recent addition that some people make fun of it, but hey, watch it a little bit. Those people are they're pretty good athletes. There's a lot of stuff, and there's been some sports that have come and gone, like baseball and things like that. I'll admit I love the beach volleyball thing in the Summer Olympics now. I mean, I get into that stuff. The 2-on-2, it's good.
USA's got a dynasty, man.
I'm just saying, man, don't sleep on wrestling, though. There's some big names that came out of amateur wrestling. Daniel Cormier, UFC heavyweight champion.
Man, I'm serious. The Greco-Roman wrestling fires me up.
Well, I've always looked, Olympic boxing is something.
Yes,
too.
Like, Shakur Stevens last year, Clarissa Shields. There have been some pretty, and then obviously you got the Floyd Mayweathers, Deontay Wilder. That's why his nickname is the Bronze Bomber, because he won bronze at the Olympics. So there you go.
I'm still mad.
Who knew Munson was filled with so much knowledge about Olympic wrestling?
I'm still mad about Roy Jones Jr.
Oh yeah, he got robbed
in 1988. One of the worst. Just, travesty. Travesty.
Roy Jones, you deserve it.
That's right. When we come back, Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, will join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds signing Connor Ingram and maybe how he would handle an NHL season returning to action. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, and it's that time of the week. Our good friend Chris Mason joins us, driven by Freeland Chevrolet. Chris Mason, also brought to you by Smoky Mountain Tops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. Visit SmokyMountainTops.com. C-Mace, what's going on, my man?
What's up, guys? Just brewing up a fresh pot of coffee as we speak.
C-Mace, nice. I gave the show some homework yesterday in terms of like discovering the art of how to best put out a TikTok video, and hopefully here in the next week or two, we're going to be able to get that done. You are a TikTok expert. What would be your advice to our show on how to go about the TikTok epidemic now that we're all stuck in the house?
Well, I don't actually. TikTok is not my. I did one with my daughter, and that's about it.
That makes you an expert.
I use video editing. So I use this app. It's called Splice, and it helps you. You can add cut up the video easily. You can add pictures, music over top of it. Sound effects. It's pretty awesome. Once you get the hang of it, it's pretty easy to make the video. So that's where I make all my uh, my videos from. It's really just takes a few minutes to kind of figure out how to navigate around, but once you do, it's easy and it's fun and it's helping me kill the time, I'll tell you that much.
So are there more in the works then? We got more to look forward to on the CMAS production?
I think so. I think I gotta keep her going. I don't know. I'm embarrassing myself a little bit, but I guess I really don't care. So I got another TikTok I might do. I'm getting into that. I still don't quite get the hang of that completely, but there'll be some. I just gotta think of exactly what I'm gonna do next, but we'll see.
Well, Chris, obviously the press,
I'm open.
Oh well, look, we have to come up with suggestions for ourselves. We got to get involved in the game first. You're already got one foot in the door, so you're ahead of us.
I got you.
Chris, obviously the Predators announced yesterday signing Connor Ingram to a 3-year deal, and you look at the stats he's had in Milwaukee this year. I think he's 21-5-5, .933 save percentage, 1.92 goals against. Had a phenomenal season for the Admirals. What did you make of the signing by the Predators for Connor Ingram, and what that could mean for Ingram in the future here in Nashville?
Well, I think it's obviously a great sign. I you look back to when they acquired him in the summer. It was a great trade for the organization in terms of getting young goaltender depth. He was a big prospect in Tampa, and for whatever reason, he fell out of favor there. And Nashville jumped at the opportunity. Thought, you know, they saw a lot of potential in this kid, and he's had a great season. So, you know, this is, to me, you look at the third year, I believe it's a one-way, you know, and you look at Pekka's age and where he's at in his career, and, you know, it's an opportunity for him. And obviously with the way he's played this year, him and Grosnick have both had great years. So there's definitely opportunity. He was a high draft pick, great prospect, and they were really happy that they were able to get him to kind of restock the shelves in their goaltending depth. So good signing for him. He's from what I hear from everybody, he's a really good kid, hard worker, and obviously good goaltender from what I saw as well, and some of the highlights this year and at the development camp and in the preseason, I liked what I saw. So I think I think he's definitely got a future.
So Chris, we at The Athletic, we did, you know, a lot of our hockey writers voted on awards, which you know, to me it's like, I was interested to read it. I also, like, I don't want to think about the prospect of, you know, not a resumption at some point. But I don't know if you were able to look at this, but we were talking earlier, a little bit surprising to me anyway. I think to Robbie, you know, Roman Josi was the runaway winner right now in the voting for the Norris over John Carlson. You know, I think you can certainly make a strong case for Roman, but does that surprise you at all? And do you think it's, I guess, that decisive at this point?
Well, honestly, like from looking into the numbers and doing the research that I did, the result doesn't surprise me. What surprises me, and, you know, these awards that are voted on by the media and, you know, the broadcasters do the Jack Adams, the general managers do the Vezina, I always question how much research and time people will put into making their decision. Let's say someone that's covering the LA Kings, how much research are they going to put into to fall in the New York Islanders? You know, for me, for example, how much am I going to look into Ottawa Senators situation or different teams? So when I try to do my award voting for the Jack Adams, I try to find out as much as I can. I know obviously a lot of the storylines and everything, but I want to make the right choice. So I was really impressed that, you know, that the people, you know, put as much effort into, you know, looking past the point totals, because a lot of times, I mean, you just see players win based on, you know, those basic statistics, wins and losses for a goaltender, maybe save percentage, not the deeper analytical stuff. And I think the more analytics become a part of the game, the more obviously the media has been really on board with supporting those types of things. And I think that, you know, people care about their decision. So I think that people have done a lot of research and just looked past the surface stats of John Carlson having a, you know, an awesome year. He's having a great year. He's having a Norris Trophy caliber year. And I also read the article with Adam Vingan and his counterpart in Washington, and she made some good arguments too that he's having a historic season and all these types of things. But at the end of the day, when you look at the best all-around defenseman, to me, honestly, it's there's no doubt that it's Roman Josi.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us. And Chris, we were having a discussion earlier, and look, in sports, we always talk about, like, the most important position in sports, and the quarterback in football comes up, obviously, in hockey goaltending comes up, and you look at like the NFL, people draft quarterbacks all the time in the first round, sometimes draft too many quarterbacks in the first round that maybe aren't worthy of first round picks. You look in hockey, and it's not really the same situation. Like, you have your outliers, like Marc-Andre Fleury, who's taken, I think, with the first overall pick. But, for instance, this last year in the draft, no goalie taken in the first round at all. It wasn't until, I think, the 36th overall pick that a goalie was selected. Why do you think NHL teams view drafting goalies a little bit differently than NFL teams do with quarterbacks, even though I think we would all agree the quarterback is the most important position in the NFL and goaltending is the most important position in the NHL?
Well, to me, I think it's because development. It's just hard. The development takes so much longer for a goaltender, so it's hard to project potential. And a lot of, you know, teams are obviously drafting goalies that, you know, some could come from powerhouse junior teams where they're, you know, getting 19, 20 shots a game. Their numbers are maybe astronomical. There's something there. There's a lot of potential, but you just don't know. Whereas four is defensemen, they're engaged in the play. They're always getting it done. It's easier to project these guys. Goaltenders usually take a lot longer to develop at the pro level, have to play in the minors, get adjusted to the game, and then you never know where the guys are going to fall in, who's going to take the biggest jump. So I think it's much more of a risk to draft a goaltender in the first round, unless you find a guy like Carter Hart, who's one of those guys that's just, you know, that prospect, and you just know he's that good. But there's not many guys like that. So I think in terms of drafting a goalie, you can maybe sit on a goalie, or maybe there's two or three that you feel are kind of the same. And if you get one of those guys, you never know when their age is, when they're going to develop. That's why with UC Saros, he just impressed me so much, because he came up and played it in the NHL at such a young age, and his demeanor and his mental strength of the game. Obviously, his skills are off the chart. We all know that. But the way that he was able to, you know, recover from a bad game and, you know, just play at such an elite level at such a young age is incredible. There's hardly any guys that in the history of the game that have done that. So it's just a position that takes a lot longer to develop. So it's more of a risk when you're spending a first-round pick on a goalie opposed to, you know, a forward or a defenseman.
See, Mace, last thing for you here. Obviously, we've all kind of thrown out our theories. If the NHL is able to resume action at some point and pick up the season, how would you best go about doing it? I talked about just kind of heading straight into the playoffs from a time perspective. There's been chatter from the players thrown out there about maybe going as far as August and September with the playoffs and delaying the offseason that way. If the NHL is able to return, and obviously without knowing a specific timetable, it may be harder to answer this question, how would you best go about doing it? Would you just go straight into the playoffs? How would you want to see it done?
Well, that's tough, because that big layoff, it's going to be a big layoff regardless. It already is. I honestly, there's people out there that are a lot smarter than me that are going to figure this out, but it's all going to be based on timing and how much time they feel they have to end this season and then have an off season and then start the next regular season. So I think the farther we go, the more likely it seems they're just gonna start with playoffs. But again, that's a tough pill to swallow for teams that currently aren't in the playoffs. So I'm not exactly sure if they'll have or if they'll do a little play in with the seven, eight, nine, ten, a couple play in games around robin or something. I don't know. I mean, they're gonna have to get creative regardless of what happens, but it's gonna be crazy. I think it's more beneficial for the league from a financial standpoint to finish this season, get a Stanley Cup winner, then completely write it off. It's better, and then move next season up a month if you have to or whatever. But it's going to be interesting. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of proposals thrown out there, but it's above my pay grade.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason has been our guest here on Morning Drive. See, Mace, thanks for joining us as always, and stay safe, my friend.
Awesome. Thank you. Right back at you guys. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Chris Mason brought to you each and every week by Freeland Chevrolet and Smoky Mountain Tops. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show for today. Also, look ahead at some things going on 102.5 The Game regarding Game 3 of the 2017 Stanley Cup Final. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, Joe, we have some breaking news. Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network reporting that the Panthers are expected to release quarterback Cam Newton as soon as today. So that's interesting. You know, we heard last week a trade may be in the works, try to get Cam Newton out of there via trade. It looks like the Panthers may just have to bite the bullet and release Cam Newton today. So we'll see where he ends up. But certainly an interesting end to his tenure in Carolina for Cam Newton.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that he would just be released. And also, do it, Belichick. Do it. Come on. This NFL season that we hope happens gets way more interesting if Cam and Belichick join forces. It's got to happen, man. It's got to happen.
I'm still holding out hope for Famous Jameis, but I would take Cam Newton in New England as well, just to make it a little more entertaining between the Belichick and Brady stuff going on. Joe, we were talking earlier in the show about what our ideal Monday Night Football pairing would be. Ron from Indiana texts in and says, I would like to see Chris Berman and John Madden host together so we can just see and hear the different sound effects they would make during the game. That'd be a whole lot of sound effects going on if that were the case.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Some booms and boomer and boom. There you go.
A lot of references to Brett Favre, I would imagine, going on there as well.
Probably. You bring back those Berman nicknames. Yeah, it could be fun for a week.
I think so, too. Well, Joe, we got a cool thing going on tonight on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Starting at 6 o'clock, you can hear Game 3 of the 2017 Stanley Cup Final between the Predators and the Pittsburgh Penguins, the first ever Stanley Cup Final game played at home here in Nashville. And I remember that day kind of as a whole, Joe, just the scene outside. I was there in the morning. We were going through morning skate stuff, and I kind of hung around Nashville all day just to kind of take in the atmosphere. And with everything going on Broadway, I think Alan Jackson was holding a concert that day, just all of the people around that atmosphere outside of Bridgestone Arena down Broadway. That was one of the more breathtaking sights I've seen in the history of our city, just that first home game on that Saturday of the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, my frame of reference for the city is a lot shorter. It's one of the most amazing scenes I've ever seen in any city, you know, or around any sporting events or ever will, honestly. And I'm still blown away at how Nashville handled, you know, the combination of big events there and kept it orderly and safe and fun. It was an incredible scene. Never forget it.
No, it was. And like, even, you know, a few days later when Game 6 rolls around and you've got CMA Fest going on at the same time across the river, you got the Stanley Cup Final, Luke Bryan singing on top of Tootsie's, like so much just kind of going on. And you got like hundreds of thousands of people out there. And, you know, the games themselves, Game 3 was awesome here in Nashville. It was a great game, a great atmosphere. But just the entire environment around the city. I mean, I remember Ryan Johansson talking about it. He was hurt at the time, and he wanted to get out and make sure he was kind of taking in the environment. I think he was on some rooftop bars just looking around. Like, it was incredible to watch how many people were in. When you break it down, it's kind of a relatively small area downtown of where how many people were there. It was crazy.
Yeah, and on the Ducks win, by the way, the night of the clincher, my wife and I went to Dave Matthews at Ascend, and a lot of the Predators players were there, which was interesting. It just makes me think of another thing that I can't wait to do again on the other side of this, which is go to a concert.
Yeah. No, it's crazy to see. Like, who, if you could pick one concert to go watch at Ascend after this was all done, it doesn't even have to be scheduled. Like, who would you want to go see there? Well, it's a great venue for those who have never been there.
I'll go there for anyone because it's – I love that place. I just think it's – you know, you can't have a better setting. And, you know, I love the outdoor amphitheater thing. I'll tell you what. Saw Lenny Kravitz there last summer, and he was awesome. And he still got it, you know. So I'd go see Kravitz at any point there. Weezer also was good. But, yeah, the Pixies – one of my favorite bands of all time. Got to see them there. Any of that, or really, like I said, anyone. Actually, we went to like a Maren Morris concert there. Again, you know, I'm not a country music guy.
I was going to ask you that.
But
like, would you go see a country artist?
Absolutely. Had a blast. That was fun. She was good. So any music there is worth going to. So there's another thing on the list.
Have you warmed up to country music at all since living here? Like, what sort of, like – Has there been a revelation in the heart of Joe Rexrow that, you know what, country music, it's not that bad. I can handle it.
My thing with country music, and really this goes back for a long time, I'm good with it live because I like live music. So, you know, I mean, I've seen a lot of live country music around here. Would I know an artist or look into an artist, buy anything? Probably not. But honestly, I don't really like new rock or hip-hop or anything either. Like, I still listen to, you know, Blue Oyster Cult. I mean, I'm sorry, man. You know, I like what I like. But, yeah, probably not. But again, downtown, anywhere, good artists, country artists, sure. I mean, it's good live. It's such a different experience, you know, having live music with a really good artist, regardless of the type of music, versus, you know, just listening to it. For me.
Joe, Woody Woodenhofer passes away yesterday at the age of 77, was Vanderbilt's defensive coordinator in 95-96, and then took over as head coach from 97 to 2001. Joe Fisher, play-by-play voice of Vanderbilt, will join Darren Donick and Chase talking about the life of Woody Woodenhofer and his time here in Nashville. Just a tragic day yesterday from that standpoint. I know the Vanderbilt community, he meant a lot to Vanderbilt fans and Vanderbilt fans that have been here locally for a long time.
Yeah, rest in peace to a, you know, great football guy. You're talking about four rings with the Steelers. He was the D coordinator, but he was a linebackers coach primarily during the glory years when they won all those rings. You know, I remember Woody Woodenhofer as the Detroit Lions D coordinator shortly before he came to Vanderbilt. He's actually a really good D coordinator. They had a team that went 12-4, got to the NFC title game. Chris Spielman at linebacker. I mean, he really did a great job. And if you look at him at Vanderbilt, you know, I know obviously they didn't win because it's hard to win at Vanderbilt. They had great defenses, and that's obviously what he was known for. And there's some great stories out there about Woody Woodenhofer after retirement working in a toll booth, you know, because he kind of was bored and he liked people. And it's if you can find that, I think it was Kansas City Star did a story on it. Really, really good story. Really. Obviously a colorful character and still a guy a lot of people around here have strong feelings for.
Yeah, rest in peace to him, and obviously our thoughts and prayers with his family. Woody Woodenhofer dies at the age of 77. Joe, how quickly, and you heard it from C-Mace there's some options out there available to you. How quickly are you going to get involved with our TikTok homework assignment here on the show? There's pressure involved now.
Yeah, well, I needed a little bit more than this week because I just, you know, I don't know if I'm quite ready for it. But I'm going to follow Marquise's lead on this, okay? So
you mean follow my lead?
Well,
there's no lead at all from Marquise.
Well, yeah.
My lead is not doing anything.
You got to do it too, man. You've got to do it.
I can't. I just can't. I'm sorry. I just can't do it.
Maybe we'll come up with something.
It's just no. No, that's a no from me, dog.
At some point, you're going to be so bored, you're going to change your mind. I promise you.
I'll never get that bored, trust me.
This is the first time I've given a homework assignment, and Munson just immediately balls it up, throws it in the trash, and says, I'm done with this.
Dog ate it right away.
No, teacher, sorry. Take this back to you. Put this back in your folder, teacher.
We'll get it done. Just give it a little time.
Apparently, you get on the dean's list at Alabama, and you can just do whatever you want. Munson can make whatever decision he wants to because he was so smart at Alabama.
They also didn't make me do ridiculous homework topics like TikTok either, so it helped. It helped.
Maybe something to that. Well, that's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Joe, thanks so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Great show, man.
We'll be back tomorrow from 6 to 10 a.m. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.